The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974, and underwriting our podcast for over 10 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. And now we're opening the cover in a brand new edition of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina. This issue is March 2021. Almost forgot the one there. And the theme this month is the mighty Roanoke River. This would be, of course, a picture of it on the front cover. Lots of green trees on both sides of it, no shoreline at all, and then the river meandering through from the bottom of the page to the middle, where it then takes a sharp right turn and goes off into the distance. Over the river itself are written the words, "The Amazon of North Carolina." We're going to begin our reading this month with the column From Elizabeth by Elizabeth Hudson, editor-in-chief. Fine Days of Fine Dining. I don't recall such a thing as children's menu in the 1970s. Not one that my parents ever pointed out to me, at least. At restaurants, I ordered from the main menu and ate whatever everybody else ate. A fried flounder platter at Sea King Fish Camp. A chopped barbecue sandwich at Blue Mist Barbecue. A vegetable plate with fried okra and macaroni and cheese. Counts as a vegetable, right? At Dixie Restaurant in Asheboro, meals were at familiar spots. The food not so different from what my mom or grandmother would have cooked at home. Meatloaf, country-style steak, chicken pie. But on the occasional Saturday night, my dad would put on a sport coat and my mom would brush the tangles out of my hair, and the three of us would head to Pinewood Country Club for dinner. As much as I loved going out to eat for the royal feast at Sir Pizza, or the baked spaghetti at Apple House Cafeteria, or at Grilled Cheese at Mayberry, those meals were casual, without ceremony. An evening at Pinewood felt like something special. I remember my dad pulling open the heavy front door and my mom and me in our nice dresses, walking down the carpeted hallway like we were on a runway. The hall led past the bar, its wall made out of wavy glass blocks, backlit and glowing gold. I'd cup my hands in the cool blocks and try to see through, catching the prismatic view of the gleaming brass rack above the bar that held wine glasses, their reflections glinting like diamonds. On past the room where we hung up our coats, and then we were in the dining room, chandeliers sparkling overhead, and on each table a white tablecloth and candles with tiny silver shades and cloth napkins that had been folded into perfect pyramids. I couldn't get enough of those napkins, and I was ecstatic when my grandmother saved a good housekeeping article with a napkin folding tutorial so I could practice this fanciness at home. At the table, someone pulled out my mom's chair for her. Someone clapped my dad on the shoulder and asked about his golf game. And at some point, a smiling server placed in front of me with grand flourish, my favorite thing, the only thing I ever remember eating at Pinewood, shrimp cocktail in a glass bowl on a bed of ice, a tiny fork to eat it with, a ring of cocktail sauce right in the center. I've since dined at many fine places in North Carolina, the elegant McNinch House in Charlotte and Il Palio Restaurant in Chapel Hill, the exquisite Fearington House Restaurant in Pittsboro, and Kimball's Kitchen in Duck. I spent my birthday at St. Jacques in Gibsonville. At every place, I've appreciated the experience as much as the food. But when I think back to the place that gave me my first introduction to a special occasion meal, I think of my dad proclaiming his medium-rare steak excellent, and my mother delighting over the silver boat of blue cheese dressing, and the three of us enjoying an out-of-the-ordinary moment, a night to remember. And now it's time for me to do what I do every month on the first reading of the month, and I do apologize, by the way, for being a week late with this. The magazine, you know, the U.S. Postal Service is having some problems, and they just didn't get the magazine here in an all reasonable amount of time, so we missed a week. Apologize for that. Photo Essay, the center of our state magazine for March. The mighty Roanoke River. The Roanoke begins in the Blue Ridge Mountains in Virginia and travels more than 400 miles before emptying into Albemarle Sound, linking countless lives along the way. Follow along as a native son traces the river's path through northeastern North Carolina, sharing stories of the Roanoke he knows and loves. Written by Bland Simpson. Nice double-page spread here of the river. You know, I mentioned that that cover on picture showed us an aerial view, and there were trees all the way up to the edges. There was no shoreline, and boy, that's evident here. You've got trees that are tipped at 45 degrees in the water right at the shoreline. So the river has grown up over the years, or at least at this point in time, and some other times enough to weaken the root structure. And the trees are all tipping inward toward the water, and I suppose occasionally crash down. But at least here it's wide enough that you could get a boat by. And there's two men standing in a fishing skiff here. It has a motor on the back. They have their rods out. They are both, I guess, standing on the seats of the boat to get a little better view of the water. The caption says, effective management has brought back the world-renowned Roanoke River and Albemarle Sound's striped bass fishery from 195,000 fish in 1988 to 1 million in 2018. A pair of men fishing on the Roanoke near Weldon attempt an age-old trade, a minnow on each of their hooks for a striper apiece. Overleaf, the Roanoke take or rather lakes drowned the river, though not the stories that went with it. Below Gaston Dam, Roanoke Rapids Lake covers the former 19th century village of Gaston, named in honor of distinguished jurist William Gaston, who also wrote North Carolina's official anthem, the Old North State. So we see the dam here, a lot of the concrete and metal structure, and then off to the side, a tiered shelf of green, the grass obviously producing the green off of there, and some sort of a passageway over the top. I guess it's an actual, I don't know, it looks like a couple of 18-wheeler trucks, but I'm not really sure what's on top there. I could be wrong. I think maybe they are signs. I think maybe they are. It's just too indistinct to tell. So forget what I said about a passageway for the public over the top. There's two big blue signs up there. Nice shot here taken from the bank over a lot of just budding, flowering somethings. They might be weeds. You can't tell the way these look. And they're right on the edge, just like those trees were right on the edge. The water is nice and smooth, and all of the sluices from the dam are in the background, but none are pouring water. There's a map on the right-hand side, a hand-drawn map. It is showing the flow of the Roanoke River, starting up at Carr Lake in Virginia, flowing into Gaston-like, the dividing line probably being Route 85, which cuts through there. Then it comes down to Roanoke Rapids Lake in Gaston, and Weldon is on the other side, and Route 96 divides the two. And then we go to an aqueduct, the Weldon Mills Distillery, Okonichi Neck by Halifax, and it makes a sharp turn there. It turns sharply to the right, then goes down and sharply to the left and continues on its way. It's almost like it should have been straight, but it got a crook right there. And then it goes down past the Sally Billy House, and I suspect that the reason we're seeing these on the map is that we're going to read about them this month. Comes down to Fort Branch Civil War site, and then it turns a little bit, and that would be just southwest of Windsor. And then it goes on down to Wilmington, where it suddenly turns and heads east to Purchase Islands, they say. And we see various other things like Devil's Gut and Beaver Lodge and the Garden Spot Cafe and Plymouth. And then it winds north of Plymouth, and that would be Route 64 that Plymouth is on there, headed over to Columbia. And it goes north of Plymouth, and it flows into the Albemarle Sound. So it could have taken a shortcut, but it wound around and then had to go back north to get into the Albemarle Sound. Finding the flow. With a drainage area of almost 10,000 square miles, the Roanoke River is bigger than all the other North Carolina River basins. Only the Cape Fear comes close. The catch is that all of the more than 9,000 square mile Cape Fear Basin is within North Carolina, while most of the Roanoke pulls Virginia's Blue Ridge waters our way, with just over one-third of the Roanoke actually in our state. The Dan River, part of the Roanoke's headwaters, drains some of the North Carolina over by Mayodan and Hanging Rock and the Sauratown Mountains. Then it joins the Roanoke east of South Boston, Virginia, on its way back here by way of Carr Lake, Lake Gaston, Roanoke, Rapids Lake, and the lower Roanoke below the rapids. Through Weldon, does this sound familiar, like I just read the map, and around the Okonichi Neck beneath Rainbow Bluff, past Riverport's Williamston, and Plymouth, and around the Purchase Islands on its way to the great Albemarle Sound, which, for good reason, was known long ago as the Sea of Roanoke. I didn't know that. Roanoke Rapids Lake, though smallest in the chain of three Roanoke River impoundments, including Carr Lake and Lake Gaston above it, the hydroelectric station at the Roanoke Rapids Lake Dam can generate 95 megawatts of power, 42% as much as the far larger Lake Gaston, 224 megawatt output. And Roanoke Rapids Lake draws folks who appreciate relative quiet and the many coves of its 47-mile shoreline. I have seen men fishing happily from the willow bushes where a road dead ends into the lake's south side, hoping for bream and crappie and catfish well on into the night. We've got a shot from the top of the dam now going down one of those sluices, and it's all foamy white there. And as it drops off below there, it's not where you'd want to bring a boat. There are a ton of boulders there in that water. And on the right-hand side of full page, to be out on the water all day is an incomparable success. To be on the water at sunset is simply sublime. And to be the only boat there when the sun plates the water and enameled gold is a gift from heaven, about which one must never boast, but only say prayerful thanks. And what we see here is a pink sky. And that pink is all reflected in the water. It's not blue water, it's pink water with a slight little ripples and one lonely, what I call a party boat, a pontoon boat out there. And you know what it said about that enameled gold? That's what it looks like, because we see a path. We follow the sun, which is moderately near the top of the page here, down and beneath the shoreline, which is like purple. And then all of a sudden, the water turns this wonderful emerald gold color with little ripples on the edge. It looked like somebody took a paintbrush and just wiggled it on down right next to us. Just a beautiful shot. Oh, a hard word to pronounce here. Chukoyot, I'm going to say, is how it's pronounced. Chukoyot, or Chukoyot, maybe. Chukoyot Creek Aqueduct. I've stood at the old locks at Weldon, long empty now, imagining the lock chamber filling and awaiting a 50-foot-long bateau coming down the Roanoke Canal waterway, carrying produce and hogsheads of tobacco from the upper Roanoke Valley. I can still see boatmen on the towpath leading the mules that pull the boat, cruising it slowly over the old 110-foot Chukoyot Aqueduct, held high above Chukoyot Creek by a single elliptical arch with a 30-foot span. This lovely water bridge, designed by the Scottish engineer Hamilton Fulton, who had earlier worked under the engineer behind the Caledonian Canal across Scotland, joined the National Register of Historic Places in 1976 and now serves as a key feature of the Roanoke Canal Trail. This is a stone archway over the river, and the stone walls of the archway are quite tall. There's a young lady walking the path in the center, and on either side of her, these heavy stones, blocks of granite, just tower over her. So I would guess she's a little over 5 feet, and they're a little over 10 feet tall. And there's ivy or some kind of vine creeping up this side where we can see the arch going down to a boulder beside the river, and trees overhanging the other side. Looks like a really fun trail to walk. Let's turn now to the town of Weldon and the Weldon Mills Distillery. This relatively new distillery joins a spirited tradition hereabouts. In 1840, when North Carolina was the country's premier winemaking state, the biggest vineyard around was Preacher Sidney Weller's in Halifax County. The Garrett family bought the Wellers out after the Civil War, and Paul Garrett, the Scuppernong King, crushed his grapes and bottled his wines near Weldon. These days, Weldon Mills distills a bourbon dedicated to raising funds for families of fallen soldiers, a rockfish whiskey supporting preservation of the striped bass, and notably the first rhubarb gin ever produced in America. So here's a photo of some of the products at the top, and we see the rhubarb gin bottle, and it's really amber, pinkish amber color. And down below, the somewhat odd-shaped brick Weldon Mills building. It's kind of tall and narrow, and people are gathered outside at dusk. There are lights overhead. There are big barrels with round tables on top, and people are gathered here with drink in hand and having good conversation. Probably it's the fall or very early spring, because there is a lit gas lamp outside, or several of them, offering some warmth. The Rockfish Capital. My great friend, Bill Garlick, an avid fisherman whose wet lines from Cape Lookout to Costa Rica to Tasmania, says that fishing the Roanoke in the spring is exciting a sport as an angler could find anywhere. The anadromous rockfish, or striped bass, come into our estuaries by the hundreds of thousands to spawn in the spring, and fishermen find them splashing and thrashing around, thick as can be. As the water temperature nears 60 degrees, says veteran Roanoke angler Jay Cheeseborough, the large gravid cows are quartered by the frisky bucks in what the locals call rockfish fights. That is a colorful name for the occasion, considering that the fish, in fact, are mating. And we have a picture of a rockfish splashing into the water. He apparently came out of the water, did a 180, and his mouth is just back under the water, and his body is straight up in the air, and there are all these droplets splashed around. And under a sign that says Rockfish Capital of the World hangs a rockfish on a chain, obviously a wooden rockfish, or maybe plastic, who knows. Is it a good-eating fish, you ask? The rock is one of the most delicious fishes on the planet. At home, we prepare our stripers simply. Two fillets brushed with olive oil, topped with lemon pepper, garlic powder, and lemon slices, and baked at 325 for maybe 22 minutes. A lovely double spread here, an aerial view. Let me read it first so that I know exactly what to say about the waterways here. River and rail, with more than 160 miles of track, the Wilmington and Weldon Railroad was the longest in the world when it opened in 1840, and it was immensely important during the Civil War. The W&W connected at Weldon with the Petersburg, Virginia line, which, as a whole, crossed the Roanoke carrying military material from the blockade runners' port of Wilmington North to Lee's Army of Northern Virginia, one of the last supply lines open as the Confederacy was falling during 1895. I thought they might explain why I saw two bodies of water joining here in one. There's like an island in the center, and one of the bodies of water goes off to the right and can't see what happens to it because it narrows so much it gets lost in the trees. And then the other one goes off to the right, and we can see that one a little better. It's a little wider. So this is some kind of a tributary here. There is a freight train on the bridge that cuts across the island, and there's a couple of kayakers down there enjoying the view of the scenery, including the freight train. Another aerial view, one with the water. If your boat is a small craft, you really are in that water, almost of it, under no delusion about what constitutes the superior force. A riverine world unfolds before you, the delight of sun and breeze all around, of the smells of the river, of mud and fish all merge. Kayak or canoe, the boat at times slows, then perhaps slides forward faster than you expect, shifts course a bit as the river, the Blue Ridge, pull, push, and challenge each other under your keel. And now comes the rocks, for those are the Roanoke Rapids, more than 100 feet of fall over just a few miles. You are threading the needle, looking for the next chute, falling a foot at a time toward the great Albemarle Sound. Again, a couple of, well, one looks like a canoe and one looks like a kayak in this aerial view. And they are going between some rather large rocks here. Better the large rocks than the small ones you can't see, I guess. There is a little sidebar here. It says, our state knows best paddling. We talked to three experts about their tips for paddling like a pro, the best spots in the state for beginners to dip their toes in, and how to go with the flow. Visit ourstate.com/OS, that would be our state, OS knows best. The mighty Roanoke River, coursing, curving, and bringing along most of the water that fills the enormous Albemarle Pamlico Sound's lagoon and estuary, really is our Amazon. And here's that picture from the cover. It's exactly the same of the river winding around and disappearing from our view as it turns away from us and the trees just overtake our view. Historic Halifax. One can envision Halifax's kinsmen and political opponents, William Richardson Davy, father of the University of North Carolina, and Willie Jones, father of Raleigh, discussing the new republic over drinks at the Eagle Tavern, shown here, in the 1790s. On February 27, 1825, an official delegation from Raleigh met the French Marquis de Lafayette at the Eagle, where he was spending the night while on his southern tour, and joined our great revolutionary ally for a banquet in his honor there. Nice-looking two-story building, porch sticking out, some benches on the porch. It says Eagle Tavern on the front. The colors are coffee and a medium brown. Treasures revealed. Okonichi Neck. The Okonichi Neck composes one of the bigger, wider areas in the Roanoke's bottomlands. In photographs from on high, one can read the tale of the neck's growth. See the succession of arcs in the great river made as it curved out farther and farther till it hit a granite wall that could not cut past. In high water times, the river flooded through the big peninsula, taking what it would, before leaving silt behind as it settled back down. Turkeys down the neck are of the old original stock from ancient times, and the yellow, white, and blue spring-flowering terraces of Camisia slopes are thought to date to an ice age nearly a quarter million years ago, if not more. In Mebben Holloman Bergwin's childhood adventure story, River Treasure, the Roanoke in flood diverts a stream in the neck and reveals in its bed a buried treasure. Her tale's title tells us a lot, for the real treasure is the Roanoke River itself. Sunnyside Oyster Bar, likely named for the 1930 hit song On the Sunny Side of the Street. The Sunnyside Oyster Bar, a relaxed little frame building near the corner of U.S. Highway 17 Business and U.S. Highway 64 in Williamston, has been one of the great epicenters of eastern North Carolina for most of 90 years. Offering the finest steamed oysters and shrimp anywhere, quote unquote, the Seafood Bistro's longtime oyster cooking approach is disarmingly simple. 2 minutes equals rare, 3 minutes equals medium, 5 minutes equals well done. Yellow, blue, and red neon in the front window lights the way into this hot spot by night, and pecks by the score fly out of the steam box, out back, and onto the thronged U-shaped bar. As to the ambiance, Charles Roberson, whose family opened the place long ago, once told me, "Don't be a bad boy in the Sunnyside Oyster Bar. It's the sunny side. Nothing bad's ever happened here." Here we have a shot of a portion of the building where we have the front door, white entrance with the cafe curtains in the windows and a neon sign, Sunnyside, two words. Steamed oysters, shrimp, and clams lit up in an old-fashioned neon sign. And down below, pictures of oysters and somebody picking one of them out with an oyster knife. In her successful 1995 appeal to put the sunny side on the National Register of Historic Places, architectural historian Penn Smith Sandbeck wrote, "The sunny side represents a significant chapter in the American affair with the oyster." Okay, we're running out of time here, but we talked a little bit about the Beaver Tail Camping. Deep in the down cypress and gum wilds of Devil's Got, a long distributary that leaves the main Roanoke Channel and then rejoins it above Jamesville, the visionary Roanoke River Partners built its host of tent camping platforms 20-odd years ago, including Beaver Tail and Beaver Lodge. Well, my friends, we've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I'm sorry we didn't get all the way through the pictorial. It was interesting. I hope you enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Questions, comments, call the studios, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.